Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohlig right here on LA Talk Radio.
How are you there?
I am good.
Good gift for you would be a lozenge.
Yes.
Would you like one?
Yeah. No. Because I'm tearing?
No. You were clearing your throat.
I was clearing my throat.
Yeah, you were. Yeah. I was wondering if everything was okay.
Because when I wear contacts, it affects my whole sinus.
I thought you were prepping to do your famous Brenda Vaccaro impersonation.
Oh, no, Paul.
No, you weren't.
No. No, not that.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Good. I'm pleased with this fall weather.
Gorgeous, I'm telling you.
Yes, it's very, very nice. Though I think it's going to get hotter this weekend than like it was before. I think they said that last night.
Did they?
I think.
I don't know. I was in Ohio this past week.
Ohio.
Uh-huh. And that was gorgeous. Got a nice touch of autumn.
Yeah.
You know, for just a perfect little slice of autumn and nice breeze and the leaves changing. It was really, really
now
beautiful.
You were on a sojourn across the country. With
I was on
the
a sojourn.
Film
on the film festival, our 12th festival.
Starring.
Yes. Short film I did called The Beating, selected by the College Town Film Festival.
Yeah.
It's a nomadic film festival that goes to different schools. We went to Penn State early in this year. We were at Ohio University, which is a gorgeous campus. Beautiful people there. Just a wonderful 1805 it was built, commissioned by Thomas Jefferson.
Wow.
After the Louisiana Purchase.
Wow.
And it's beautiful. It's like you went to Central Casting for college. You know, it's just like ivy covered walls and the streets in the downtown are brick, and it was really great. The students were very receptive and
you gave a speech there too.
I spoke with James Denton. James Denton from TV's Desperate Housewives.
Yeah.
He played Mike Delfino.
He's a friend of ours.
We had two shorts together and a pair of shorts, if you will, and they showed his and mine, and then we got to speak to the students about it, and then we also hosted a thing called Acting in the Digital Age, along with Breakdown Services, our sponsor here.
That lovely book that
talking about how it's a different world now in terms of submitting yourself, and it's the days of stapled on resumes on the backs of glossy 8x10s are no more or dwindling, and that it's a digital age. So
can
it was
you
really
say that again for me? Are no more.
I'm
okay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
R no more?
There's an N
at the end of
the R.
It's like gnocchi. It's an Italian affectation.
That's
gnocchi.
It.
Yeah,
of course it is.
And your week. How was yours?
Boy, what a busy one. I was covering the press event for Matilda, the musical that is getting ready to go on tour throughout the country and at the beginning of 2015. And its first stop for the actual tour prior to the preview city is Los Angeles.
So oh, okay.
I was at the Amundsen Theater. For several hours on Monday of this past week, and interviewing the composer of the show, Tim Minchin, who is fantastic.
How you said it.
A lovely personality, such a great gentleman, and we had such a good time.
Oh, good.
Doing that for Broadway World Television, and then seeing a little bit of the show in advance by a couple of performances from Tim and a young lady who had done the role of Matilda on Broadway, but is not doing it in the tour. So that was a great thing. A lovely show at my club at Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal. Do you know about my club?
I don't.
You don't?
Michael's got a wonderful supper club right there next to the El Portal.
That's right, in the NoHo Arts District. And a lovely show called Miscast, which
with Mandy Kaplan, right?
Mandy Kaplan, right singer, wrong song.
Yeah.
So it's a great spoof evening, and we always do such great business. And I was running between there and across the street to the El Portal to a CD launch party.
Yes. Joshua Eli Krantz and Kristen Towers Rolls were part of Bruce Kimmel's
Creatureland.
The Candor and Ebb album.
Yes. And The World Goes Round.
And The World Goes Round.
Jason Graw, Brent Barrett.
The first cast album of that. The full
well,
cast.
The first complete.
Complete cast album.
I mean, the actual first and only other existing album was incomplete as far as all of the music that was actually the off-Broadway production. So this is containing everything.
No, a heroic effort. We should have them on to talk about it.
Pardon?
We should have them on to talk about it.
We are. We're
we
going
are.
To. Yes, we are.
Oh, see, all this stuff, I don't even
Josh.
Know. I don't know this. Should keep me in the loop.
And then last night, I'm going to say it now.
Okay.
This little show at the Pantages
Theater. Pantages,
Pippin. the U.S. tour with Andrea Martin. And my goodness, it was such a great surprise to see. This was the first Broadway show I ever saw.
Really?
Life. Yeah.
You see the William Catt one, or was it William Catt? John Rubenstein.
John's in this show.
I'm thinking of the other guy with curly hair. He's John Rubenstein is
yes.
in this one?
Playing
he played Charlemagne?
Yes.
Oh, awesome. I played Charlemagne. It was the first show I did in college. I played Charlemagne in Pippin.
You did?
To give you an idea how big the pickings were that a 19-year-old kid was playing Charlemagne. You know,
well, John, it was nice to see him in the show, period. He got a lovely reception from the audience when he walked on the stage. Matthew James Thomas is playing the role now. He created it on Broadway and was actually nominated for a Tony Award, if I'm not mistaken. I think so. And it was very exciting, you know. It was a whole new look to the show, and it was very kind of Cirque du Soleil, so to speak, with the traveling troupe that, you know, trying to get him to see the world in a different way. And Andrea Martin's moments on stage were just hilarious, really hilarious. So fun, great, very colorful show. And then I did the red carpet all night for Broadway World TV. So I interviewed
vacuuming
Martin.
It or what is this?
Yes. Interviewed Martin Short.
Yes, I saw that he was there.
Bo Derek. Just a whole plethora of people coming on last night.
Because Rose Abdu, who we've had on the show here, Rose Abdu, she was there because she's great friends with Nia Vardalos.
Yes, Nia was there.
Is she there or in it?
She was there.
Oh, she was there.
Yeah,
okay, because I saw them out there. I wasn't sure if maybe she played one of
the roles. Yeah, no, she was wild and crazy as she is. You know, she's fun.
She's a hoot. I met Nia a couple times.
So a busy week, but thanks for asking.
All righty. We should thank our sponsors.
We should indeed.
You want to kick that off?
Yeah. We'd like to thank our sponsor Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar. And the stars have aligned today, and we've got two of them with us in the studio. From the current 3D Theatricals hit revival of Ragtime, the musical. Say hello to Kristina Rowder and Rufus Bonds Jr. Give it up for our two guests, if you would. I'm trying to find my applause button, so I'm going to spur
that. There you go.
There we go. It's so easy to. I got to Rufus Bonds. It's like, okay, I can pronounce that. But before we continue, Kristina.
Kristina.
Yeah, that's an unusual name because, you know, what's the derivation on that?
I'm sure it's Scandinavian, but really my mom just liked Kristina.
Right.
So
no.
That's all.
That's lovely.
Thanks,
lovely.
Mom.
Yeah.
And you
and then Rowder. Right?
Growler. Growl with it, too, if you want.
Ooh, that's kind of... Yeah, like
gives it something.
Easy there. Easy there, Michael. Easy there. Take a couple
nervous
deep breaths.
Now.
Okay. Yes, and you were there. You said you were there opening night for Ragtime.
Yeah,
yes.
Opening night, and I must say, Paul, it's not only gorgeous to look at, but so beautifully directed and designed and choreographed and, you know, a gorgeous full orchestra and... Super stunning, really, truly Broadway noteworthy for anyone who loves musical theater. This is Broadway caliber theater down at 3D Theatricals, or anybody who has never seen Ragtime before. I being one of them. This was the first time I had ever seen the show.
And had you seen the film?
I did not see the film.
You didn't?
No.
Okay. No.
I don't think I did. No, I would remember that.
Yeah.
So no, I don't think I did. But it's a fascinating portrait of American history set right in the 19th century. And before we get to our guests.
And our other guest that we have on the phone.
Oh, yes.
Our surprise celebrity
guest. Listens
to
the show, I understand.
He does. He listens to guests all the time.
And
he's joining us. Joe Pesci is actually.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Joe, are you there?
Hiya, pal.
There. So, okay. So he's going to listen in.
Sweet.
You know, just so we can, you know, get acquainted. You know,
sounds like
maybe we should spend a couple of minutes together. You know, to get acquainted. Before we get to it.
I couldn't agree more, and very grateful to have Joe with us. But let's start with the lovely guests we have in our studio today. Our first guest hails from Chicago, the greatest city in the world.
Yeah,
and was brought up in the theater world by her parents, both longtime opera singers, which in turn led to her making her debut on the opera stage at age 13. At 18, she moved to New York to study at the New York. What is this not true? I'm only reading.
I don't know if I was on the opera stage at 13.
Look, hon, I only read the cards you hold up. So if you want to change that. She moved to New York to study at the New York Conservatory for Dramatic Arts, during which time she appeared at Carnegie Hall. Is that
That's true.
Okay.
Yeah.
She eventually, it was in the lobby, but she was at Carnegie Hall.
I just make
Hall.
Up everything, essentially.
She eventually headed west to the University of Arizona to further her studies and perform a career. Los Angeles was next on her agenda, and it has been here that Southern California audiences have come to know her from co-starring roles in such regional theater productions as 3D theatricals Into the Woods, Dirty Rotten Scoundrel, 1776, the greatest musical in the world as far as I'm concerned, and Music Man and Annie, and co-starring opposite Sally Struthers. Please welcome Christina Rowader. Thank you.
I'm trying to reach you. Tougher to get to the president.
I'm sorry. Joe. Joe agrees too. So how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, good, good. Lovely.
You know, I've seen you in a lot of shows before I ever met you. All those many of those shows, yeah.
Really?
Annie with Sally? You did it out of Cabrillo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Saw that.
That was like, I don't know, that was a while ago now.
Who'd you play in Annie?
I was Grace.
Grace.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was fun. It was definitely, I don't know, it was a
Grace
second
is, Grace is Rooster's.
Grace is the woman who saves
Daddy
Annie
Warbucks.
From the orphan. Yeah, Daddy Warbucks lady.
Okay. Yeah,
his lady. Daddy Warbucks lady.
She's taking it to another level now.
That's always what I wanted to do, but I wasn't allowed to.
So, for the listeners and for those who, like Michael, hadn't seen the show until he saw it recently, can you give us a little synopsis? And, of course, we'll talk to Rufus about this as well. Well, the little synopsis of is it possible to give a synopsis of Ragtime? That's a good question because it's such a sprawling tale. And there's so many little stories going on, at least if I remember correctly
from
the film.
Three distinct
stories. Yeah. So why don't you share one of the narratives with us, and then we'll hit Rufus up for one of the other ones later on.
Rufus is probably better at it. Anyway, so but
or how you fit into this, your storyline.
Well, mine is a made up character. Mother is made up, and so is father. And Edgar, the story is told through Edgar's perspective, the little boy. So that's, you know, one of the reasons why mother doesn't have a name and father doesn't have a name is because we're mom to him and dad to him. So the whole story is sort of set up that way. And what he sees through his little boy's eyes. And then, I forgot what I was going to say from there.
Well, do you play it in sort of a stylized way, like a child would view it? Or do you play it? I mean, if it's through his eyes, it's not like, you know, stylized or in like dream state.
Okay. No. It's just sort of basic. And then we bring the characters to life in a very realistic way.
Okay.
I believe all of us do. Mm-hmm. And then there are bits and pieces of history that are sort of flowing throughout the whole show that aren't necessarily historically in order. Mm-hmm. But
historically true, just not necessarily historically
in that order. So
yeah.
That's how the show is.
But your character, mother and father and the young boy represent a whole, you know, sector of this play, which is the wealth of,
right.
You know, during that time period and
yeah.
the contradictions that come from other factors during that same time period.
Right.
And you do such a beautiful job. Well, you're a beautiful singer, but I mean, it's quite stunning. This show, Paul, is unbelievably designed, and the lighting and mm-hmm. all of it put together, and you know, the costumes, which I understand are the Broadway costumes.
Yeah.
So that's pretty special. But you're from the top of the show, it just kind of pulls you in and keeps you there, you know, until the very end.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, something else.
It's like
not
a
saying
movie.
That because I'm involved with it either. I'm saying it as someone who's not seen it before. So
I've never seen the show either, actually ever.
See, this is one of the things that 3D theatricals can do so well, because you said there's 45 people?
Yeah.
So, you know, this has the in this regard, it has more to offer than a touring Broadway production, because there's no way a touring Broadway production is going to have that many people. It's just logistically and cost prohibitive. You can't travel. I mean, travel and lodging, that's what kills a show. That's where the money is. So that's why these 3D theatrical shows are so great to catch while they're here in these abbreviated runs. It's only 5 weeks, yes. 5-6 weeks?
Yeah. Split between two theaters.
Yeah. Right, right. And which is another nice thing, right. too, because we're in Southern California. You got to drive everywhere, so you have two options. But they really know what they're doing. And to have, you know, Ragtime, you know, to take that tale, E.L. Doctorow, I believe, is the book that it's based on. Was it E.L. Doctorow?
Yes.
Yeah. It's just a sprawling world that you're immersed in, you know, and with, unfortunately, a lot of the recurring themes that we're still seeing today, some would say to a lesser degree, some would say that there's been very little change, depending on your perspective and point of view. Yeah. But I'm very anxious to see
and
this
you know,
one.
And the fact that the 3D producers, which there are three of, and are as young as they are, have this amazing knowledge of, you know, production. It's kind of mind-boggling, actually.
Yeah.
But it's so we're so grateful as theater goers to have them in our midst, you know, in the same La Mirada is, you know, very high standards there at Kathy Rigby and her husband Tom McCoy's.
I think one of the great things with TJ that you're speaking of as well is because he was in theater himself.
Right.
So therefore, he was also an actor.
Right.
So therefore, he understands what production is. He understands both sides of the fence, and he understands the value of great theater, which is why he's also able at their young age to produce such great work, because it's in his heart.
Yeah,
right.
Totally.
He's not a bean counter. It's like he knows the experience as a performer.
Absolutely.
He knows the experience he wants to present.
And as a director. He's quite intuitive. So.
Absolutely.
You know, I was supposed to, I don't know if I told you, Michael, but I was supposed to do this production.
You were?
Yes, I was. I couldn't do it. I had a conflict.
What was that, Paul?
Yeah, I can't sing or dance. Oh, look at the time.
Hello.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. I do that every show.
Yeah.
I do that joke every show. And Michael, I mean, probably every other show I do that joke.
You do? I do. Wait for it now.
Michael's just delighted that I do. Before we continue talking to Kristina, I want to throw out the information here, which we'll do a couple of times before the hour is out, on how people can get tickets to see this wonderful production of Ragtime. The online ticketing architecture is 3DTshows.com, as in 3D theatricals, and the 3 is the number 3, not written out. 3DTshows.com. The dates for Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center, November 1st through November 9th, and then the you know, when I'm looking at the second page, Michael, do you, the Plummer Auditorium plays through
the
previous page, and that plays, that's playing through October 26th.
This
so that's
weekend.
Playing just through this weekend.
Yes.
Yes. Online ticketing again, 3DTshows.com. Price is $28 to $60. That's another thing. You would what you can get out here for that, you compare that to New York and Chicago prices, and it's just you really... You got to take advantage of this. Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center is 1935 East Manhattan Boulevard in Redondo Beach, California. And, of course, the Plummer Auditorium, 201 East Chapman Avenue in Fullerton. And like I said, we'll throw that out there a few more times before we go.
Kristina, I want to ask you a question, because you started performing so young. And your parents were opera singers, so that's one thing to kind of follow their lead, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But did you, so you did not necessarily take to opera, or you
No.
Just,
yeah. So, of course, my dad wanted me to be an opera singer.
Right.
Growing up, I was trained classically. I just didn't have the passion for it. I said, Dad, you did opera. I'm doing film. Somehow I've not gotten to the film part yet, but musical theater, I can put more, bring a character more to life, I feel like, versus opera, which I could probably be smacked for just by saying that.
We just think that the opera characterizations are forced to sort of fit within a world. That...
Well, and also you have to really sing what's on that page. You don't have as many liberties as you would with musical theater. Like an actor can take a song in musical theater and pretty much play around with rhythm and rubato and all that stuff.
Right.
In an opera, it's very strict. It's a very small world. You need to sing what's written on the page. Don't get all flourishy. Don't get off, you know, don't go into your own little world. But it's incredibly impressive when you get a really good opera singer who is able to interpret the text at the same time, and that's impressive, and that's why Dad wanted me to do it, because he's like, not only can you sing it, but you can act it, he said. And I'm like, Dad, no, it's not for me.
Do you think that, because I've always thought, I mean, I have great respect for that, you know, art, but I've always thought that the acting part of it, at least from the operatic performances I've seen, was very overdone.
Yes.
And I think this newer crop of opera singers who are, you know, making waves as stars now in opera.
Renee Fleming.
I suppose she would be one. I'm talking about...
Are they very genuine?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they're good-looking young people, first of all, and they're fit, and they are capable of doing just what, you know, their predecessors have done. But by doing so and having that kind of image, they're delivering opera in a different kind of way to an audience that's now discovering it because of the person that's on the stage.
Well, and it's also smart, because I mean, at the end of the day, you know, the not only I know what the age of the median ticket buyer is in musical theater, and I know that's 55, but I can't imagine that the median age of the ticket buyer for opera is less than that. So they have to appeal to a new generation with a less stylized portrayal and something that's just a little more genuine.
Right. You know? And these younger opera stars are becoming, as I said, like teen stars would become. I mean, they have a following of people now that are young and their age that will go see them.
Right. I also think that in terms of what you're saying, that overblown performance, and Kristen, if your family does this, you would know better than I. But in terms of...
But no offense, Mom.
No, not that. No, the point I'm making is not that. Part of it, too, is that the performance, or the acting performance, if you will, I'm assuming is always secondary to what you said, which is getting that song right.
Right. And it is secondary. Okay. At least it was back in the day.
Yeah.
80s, I guess, the 90s.
Right.
It's secondary.
So I think, I just think that the amount of focus is not given to that as much as the actual delivery of the song is, unlike
delivery
musical theater.
Delivery is huge in opera. You better do it right and do it really well as well. But it's definitely Park and Bark-esque.
What is it? Park and
Park and Bark.
Well, oh, just plant yourself
stand
and just
stand there. If you have your aria,
you kids there, with your terminology.
Dude, that's not my terminology. Somebody told me that. I was like, all right, sounds right. Sounds
right. Yeah.
Yeah. Joe agrees.
Yeah.
He's back? I didn't know he was back.
What's
Park,
up, Joe?
Park. What's up, Joe? Oh, geez, that's
well, so you, but you prefer musical theater. Now. You're
I
happy
do.
On the musical theater.
Favorite roles?
I would say this one for sure, because she's got the blend of being
that
a badass.
11 o'clock number there.
Well, too, but she. I mean, she can. I can actually sink my teeth into her character, and that's why I love playing her, is because she's a woman beyond her time. Mm-hmm. And being able to balance that classic, I'm a woman, I gotta stay, you know, perfect and not show my feelings, and yet then when she does show her feelings, I mean, it's real and serious, and it's, you know, no joke. So I love that, the challenge of bringing that character to life, and that's what I like. It's not, the music is gorgeous, don't get me wrong, it's awesome, and it's like Jerry Goldsmith movie. It's like a film score, and it's like watching a movie.
It is
on stage.
It very much is.
And I love singing with that music. Love working with Julie on that music, recreating back to before.
Julie being Julie Lamoureux.
Julie Lamoureux,
the musical director.
Oh. Yes, and I love that she worked with me on Back to Before, in the sense like, I want to do certain things. Are you open to this and that? She's like, yeah, let's play around. And so that was nice. That was very special.
Have you done shows there before with 3D Theatrical?
Into the Woods, I did with 3D before.
Rapunzel's.
Yes.
Okay.
All the screamer, the crazy one, just, you know, typecasting.
I don't want to put you on the spot about this, but considering I've already insulted your family, I think I'm safe in doing it. No kidding. Everyone who comes out, we've had a couple of shows from 3D Theatricals, and they, that whole familial experience. They all talk about, like, in it, of course, it is a family that runs the organization, but everyone wants to run back and work with them again.
Yes.
Rufus, do you find that to be a case
Absolutely.
Too?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I did Parade with them as well. It's just a great company.
You were Ovation nominated for that. Did you?
He won.
You won.
I did.
Yes,
he did.
Some people win Ovation Awards. others just get nominated. I'm not bitter, but go on.
You know, it's just great to be able to work with people who, as we spoke with before, who understand what the business is and working from the inside out and want to do great work and they're passionate about it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's great working in that atmosphere.
Yeah.
And there's no mess.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a rarity.
And well, we're going to talk about that and more with Rufus, but we have a live arts calendar.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Start up here, Paul.
Why don't you kick it off, Michael, and I can, and I'll take the lead on that.
All right. Yep. Broadway musical director Todd Ellison brings an afternoon of Broadway's greatest hits to the spectacular Valley Performing Arts Center on campus at Cal State Northridge this Sunday, October 26th at 3 p.m. Mr. Ellis brings with him an impressive cast, headlined by television's Jane Lynch from the Fox hit TV series Glee, along with Kate Schindel, Clea Blackhurst, Mike McGowan, and Jose Iaña. Do you think I said that right? L-L-A-N-A?
Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, I guess you got it right.
Yes, I did. The event includes performances from South Pacific, State Fair, Crazy for You, Oklahoma, Funny Girl, Jekyll and Hyde, Chicago, Hello Dolly, and more. And for more information and to purchase tickets, call 818-677-3000 or visit valleyperformingartscenter.org. And you know, it's one of the most spectacular venues in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's the Valley.
1,700 seats.
It's the Valley equivalent of the Disney Concert Hall. It's actually prettier inside than the Disney Concert Hall.
And it's probably has the best acoustics of any theater in Los Angeles.
It's a gorgeous place.
Just amazing.
I saw their opening night there with Sean.
Yes, you did.
I saw Loudon Wainwright and I want to say Sean Colvin. Was it Sean Colvin?
Anyway, I think so.
It was really enjoyable. Yeah. Anyway, Partners of Doris, POD, a nonprofit 501c3, is hosting their annual Save the Music program fall festival fundraiser at Doris Place Elementary School. The instrumental music program at Doris Place was built 2 years ago with APOD's unyielding commitment and effort to bring the arts back to our deserving K through 6th grade students. So please join them and support this community-wide event open to the entire Los Angeles area to help ensure the program will get funded for another year. Due to the $450 million LAUSD budget deficit, fine arts have been slashed in our public elementary schools when young students are at a critical stage in their cognitive and creative development. The arts serve as a critical component. I should stand on my soapbox on this, Michael.
Yeah.
I feel so strongly about this. The arts serve as a critical component to a complete education and are proven to increase student academic achievement, open doors of opportunity, scholarships, and in short, a world never imagined possible for a lot of these young people. Young people who consistently participate in comprehensive, sequential, and rigorous music programs are 4 times more likely to be recognized for academic achievement, and students in top quality music programs scored 22% higher in English and 20% better in math than students without music programs. The event is this Saturday, October 25th, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Doris Place Elementary. That's 2225 Doris Place in L.A., 90031. And more information is available at podpartnersofdoris.org. That's P-O-D, partnersofdoris.org. Or you can donate online via PayPal at tinyurl.com/podsavethemusic. Mia Porter, a friend of ours, works very much with this organization, and we can't send more good thoughts and help and money their way, because it's, you know, last time they did this, I don't know if I have this exactly right, they got their instruments and then the funding was pulled and they had to give their instruments back.
What?
They had started the program and then they said, no, you can't. And I mean, I'm not sure I have that 100% right. I just know that it was very unpleasant and they're really doing wonderful, wonderful work.
Wow. God bless them.
So that's my preaching, Michael.
I guess so.
Preaching for
but
that,
it's so. Important to be heard.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
You know, and if Carol Channing was with us as she was on our second ever show.
When are we going to be on the radio?
Yeah.
It's a lovely show.
We had Carol, been talking for a while.
Carol
didn't realize she was on the radio.
Carol Chatting was on for 5 minutes, and she doesn't hear well, and it was on a speakerphone, and we were talking for 5 minutes, and she said, "When are we going to be on the radio?" We said, "You've been on for 5 minutes, Chatting." "Oh, hello."
And we do that out of great respect for her.
Yes, we love her.
But she has such a shares exactly
passionate,
everything you just
and her, her husband too, very civic minded about the arts. Yes,
yes, indeed.
All right, Michael, so, would you introduce this striking gentleman?
I will. Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is a true force of nature who earlier this past summer starred as Porgy in a new production of Porgy and Bess at London's Open Air Theatre. He appeared in U.S. national tours of The Color Purple, Disney's The Lion King, and on Broadway in Once on This Island and Rent, and the original Broadway production of Parade as Jim Connolly, for which he was nominated for the Drama Desk Award for Outstanding Featured Actor in a Musical, and for which, in 2013, as we said earlier, he won a Los Angeles Best Featured Actor Ovation Award in 3D Theatrical's extraordinary revival of the same show, Jason Robert Brown's Hauntingly Brilliant Parade. He's currently starring on stage now, as we have said, as Cole House Walker Jr. in 3D Theatrical's breathtaking production of Ragtime the Musical, completing its run this weekend through October 26th at Fullerton's historic Plummer Auditorium, and, as Paul said earlier, reopening November 1st through November 9th at the Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center in Redondo Beach, California. Please welcome the astonishing Rufus Bonds Jr. How are you?
Okay. I'm good, thank you.
Yes, you are good.
All right, Rufus, here's the thing.
Yes.
Here's the thing.
Yes.
Cole House Walker Jr., mm-hmm. Rufus Bonds Jr.
Yes.
We'll start there.
Okay.
Secondly, you're both very sort of, that character, you have sort of a quiet intensity about you, but yet I still feel that you could kick my ass.
Okay.
So,
who couldn't?
Thank you. Yeah, the bar's not set that high. But the thing is, this sort of a character, I mean, when a role like this, and I'm not saying that, I don't know you personally, I just met you 15 mm-hmm. minutes ago, I'm not making blanket assumptions here. But when a role like this comes, you know, across your plate, it has to be a glorious day when you know you're going to play this guy.
You know, it really, really is. It's one that I always wanted to do. And what's amazing about it is you really don't grasp the fullness of it until you really do it.
Right.
In terms of his massive journey,
right.
It's and the way the character has been developed with TJ and what he's done with the whole storyline between myself and Sarah, it's like the greater and the deeper you love, the greater the pain is revealed later of when you've lost somebody. Because for me. And the character with Sarah, it's really my first love. I've had many women before,
right.
but this is the first person I've actually loved and was able to build a life with. You know, I basically courted her for 5 months, going back to that house every Sunday.
Right, right.
You know, and so to kind of get her to realize I'm a different person. And then you finally find this person, you have a family together, and then she's killed and taken away from you. And then everything you believe in, that America is going to be the better world now, that America will allow me to be a full man regardless of my skin color,
right.
because everything is going to be just, and it's all about justice, it's all about honor, it's all about working hard. And, right. you know, I've worked and I've earned and I'm doing quite well. Cold House, you yeah. know, is doing quite well financially, so he's able to buy, you know, the Model T4, which is a symbol.
Right.
Even today, when you
sure.
drive around in Los Angeles, the cars are symbols,
right.
you know, of your hierarchy financially.
Right, right, right. Here's where I'm at.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So therefore, when he runs up against the racism, he looks at that as their problem
right.
because I'm good with where I am in life.
Right.
But then when all of that is ripped from him and then all of this truth or the dream of a better America that I'm walking into is a lie, and your manhood has been challenged, which is why he will not marry.
Right.
Because I can't marry you until I take care of this, until I know I can walk in the world as a man. And when all of that is ripped from you, and you just, you lose your mind. because you don't know where to go or what to do, because it's like being raised in a world being told one thing and then you realize one day it was all a lie and you have to start your life over or not.
And I think that's the brilliance of this story of Dr. O's tale, I think, is that, you know, here it is. Here's a man who's doing, you know, by the on the yardstick of anyone of that day, regardless of color, is doing everything right. He knows what the American dream is. He's working hard. He's trying to ascend this ladder. But the racist element will not allow that to take place.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter how hard this particular character works. And I think what's beautifully done in the film, as I said, I've never seen the play, but in the film, and I'm assuming this is the same, is these seemingly minor, insignificant events that just build on one another and build on one another until, I mean, does the same thing happen with the car, with the racist,
exactly.
with
yes.
defacing his
it
car?
Does. It
right.
does.
Which is just, you know, which is bad enough. But what that blossoms or burns into, the
yes.
rage that burns into, and that too is so symbolic.
Absolutely.
You know, where it's just, it's really not about that. It's about broader, much broader
exactly.
themes. Yeah.
You know, and the whole piece basically touches on three worlds coming into this location at the same time. You have your immigrants coming to America. You have your African Americans, blacks, however you want to call it that day. They will call them Negroes in Harlem at that time. And then you have your New Rochelle people where mother is who are quite affluent, you know, who have their own stature. And then so therefore everyone has to look at each other and figure out where do I really sit in this so-called America, what does it mean?
Where's my place at this table?
Exactly, And how do I negotiate going up or down, or where do I move, or how do I live? And that's kind of what this whole piece revolves around. You have various voices on the outside, like Golda, Emma Golden, and you still have J.P. Morgan. You have all these iconic figures shaping this America that we live in today. And what's interesting about it is the America that we live in today, is it vastly different from that time? It is different, yes. We have grown some, yes. But still at the root of our country is still that racism. It's still that ignorance. It's still that inability to... But then again, I always say people are shaped by their exposure. So therefore, if you live in one place all your life, then how do you know that what you were taught is not true?
Well, I will agree with you and I will disagree with you on that point. And here's how. I agree that it's what you're exposed to. Mm-hmm. But I also agree with that taking responsibility for educating yourself in terms of dealing with other people. The example I'm thinking of is my grandfather and my Uncle John, exactly the same age, grew up in the Bronx, you know, both born in the 20s. My grandfather, one of the most heroically racist guys that ever lived. My Uncle John, the complete opposite. These guys lived on the same street. So they were exposed to the same thing in the Bronx, you know, growing up. But yet it was their own responsibility to, like, my grandfather saw people and my Uncle John talked to people. And I think that was the biggest difference of their upbringing.
But then that's exposure.
Yeah, true. True enough. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Did I disagree with you or did I just make your point again?
I think you did the latter.
I don't
exactly.
know. I think I just... All right. I just try to be provocative. It's a radio show. Just trying to... Yeah.
Well, and everything that he just said, and then all across the country, too, you know, the other factors of people, Indians, you know, the American Indians, and all of the... Everybody
Absolutely.
Was finding their way.
Absolutely.
You know, to this place.
Absolutely.
It's almost like Ragtime is such a great title because it's about that sort of, well, of course it's the music that everyone knows, but it's that music is so frenetic and it's in every direction. And really, you know, it's a state of mind. Ragtime was that time when everyone just like, you know, when the poor huddled masses, you know, were I'm sure that if you look in the areas of New York then, that the concentration of immigrants were probably far more varied within communities than it got later in the 30s and the 40s, when it was, okay, now the Lower East Side is primarily Jewish, and this is primarily Italian, and this is primarily African-American. But at that point in time, no one had their footing yet.
Exactly.
But everyone was, yeah, no.
You know, and it's a piece that students need to see.
Yes,
they do. It's a shame that it's already happened because it's too late, but it would have been great if there could have been student matinees, because I know there's a time where students were bussed to the theater. I don't know if that still exists. But
yeah. I don't know about the formality of that, but I know that at 3D there was a school that contacted us about bringing their students.
Oh, great.
They made a... that opportunity possible.
Yeah.
I don't know what show they attended, but it did happen.
Okay.
And what a way to impart this tale and this story through, music. And, I always go back to the same thing. I learn more about Christ's last days from Jesus Christ Superstar the musical than I did from 12 years of Sunday school, because one interested me and the other didn't, Yeah. So that's what a way to impart
Absolutely.
It, through that. Yeah.
Before we... we're getting close to the time of the end of the show, but I do want to talk to Rufus about your experience in Porky and Bess, which must have been a glorious
it was amazing
situation in London too.
It was in London, yes, and it was amazing because it was reconceived. They used a lot of the music from Broadway and the book. They used that as their guide, but they did change some things, and the director wanted to go back to the book a Porky, basically.
Because you did this up through the end of August, didn't you?
We did,
yeah.
Yes. And it was reconceived. It was the set itself was like a crumbled piece of copper, so there was really no set. Mm-hmm. There were five tables and 20 chairs, and that would transform into the boat, into anything they needed. So it was all about the work.
Wow.
It was just great. It's a role that I always wanted to do, that I was told that I would not be able to do because of how it looked and la, 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 la. And because the role was written for a bass, basically. And then when Norm Lewis did it on Broadway, he's a baritone tenor.
Right.
So it was right up in my range. So the music was perfect for me. Mm. It was amazing. Physically, it was very demanding because I had a leg brace on to be crippled. So that was challenging.
Did you do the thing on your knees?
No.
Okay. But
no,
just...
we used a leg brace, which just contorted the body, basically. But it was some beautiful, beautiful work.
Talk about a show that could potentially bridges that gap between musical theater and opera, too.
Absolutely.
Because that is Absolutely. Just like, there's some songs in that that just, You're not doing Mr. Cellophane from Chicago there.
it was a hard sing.
Yeah,
too.
I bet.
It's just so much singing.
How many performances did you have?
We did eight.
Did you?
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Brutal.
Yeah. We did eight and two show days.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. It was.
That's a long one.
Yeah, but it was outside.
Uh huh.
So therefore, when the hurricane came, sometimes it did storm on stage. For real, it was magical.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And you kept going?
Man.
Everybody kept going?
We canceled one show because of rain.
Wow. And it's probably rain. You're probably okay with. It's the minute there's lightning that everything's.
Oh yeah, it's time to go.
Yeah, it's time to go.
Gotta go.
Sorry.
Yeah. Wow, that is so interesting. So, where of all the things you've done, and you've done Broadway, you've done all these national tours. Do you have a favorite experience in of all those characters that you did?
It changes. One of my favorite was. Big River with Def West.
Yes.
Just because of that experience of signing and all at the same time, it gives you such freedom. So I kind of love that. This is up there with that.
Yes, I'm sure it is.
So it's Porgy. So it's just hard.
Yeah, it's hard to, nail it down. Give it the breadth of experience that you have.
Everything, in theater is every... experience like that is you're gaining a new family. You're taking something with you that will be with you for the rest of your life.
Yes, so absolutely.
I imagine it is very hard to choose that.
We are talking to the two of the stars of Ragtime, mm-hmm. presented by 3D Theatricals, and it is currently playing. This is at the Plummer Auditorium in Fullerton, California, and it will be there through October 26th, and then from there it moves on to Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center, 1935 East Manhattan Boulevard in Redondo Beach. Tickets online at 3DTShows.com. It's that time, Michael.
It's that time. We have to baptize our guests.
It is the time we baptize our guests, and we ask them to share a tale, a theatrical tale of woe, a tale of embarrassment, a tale of awkwardness, something that happened during performance that you can share. Christina, can you kick us off?
Well, unfortunately, I mean, it's a good story, but it's funny that I'm not it's easily embarrassed. I pretty much had to strip on stage, kind of, before, back to before.
Mm-hmm.
My petticoat.
Back to before is a song in the show.
Yes, yeah, okay. the big number that mother has to sing and can't be holding on to her skirt the whole time because that would be silly. So anyhow, I had a wardrobe situation, and the petticoat underneath my already pretty heavy dress, and granted, I'm barefoot, I have nothing else underneath, slips down to my knees during the scene before I start to sing. So I pretend. And
so you got this big number coming up, and you're basically your petticoats have fallen halfway down.
Yes, okay. yes, it's down there. Nobody really notices yet until... the father leaves, I'm alone on stage, and the music starts for the back to before, and I'm pretending like I'm hyperventilating, like there's a corset on me. I'm not really wearing a corset, but I rip off the petticoat underneath, and I angrily throw it into the wings, like, that's it! I'm done with the petticoat! I'm gonna start singing now! So that was it. I mean, I guess it could be embarrassing. It's a funny story.
But it's also one of those things that I could just see some foppish jerk reviewer just going, and you know, the moment of the oppression of women was so beautifully represented in the Castaway petticoats.
I'm casting this away now.
You just see
I'm my own woman.
So yeah, exactly. Someone just reading into that like crazy.
So what did the audience, was there a reaction?
I thought I heard either from the wings or the audience that, like, oh no, she's not getting naked. Please don't tell me she's getting
naked. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome, Joe.
Joe Pesci was there. That's what he thought.
Wow.
Yeah, saw the petticoats coming off.
Best scene ever.
Thank you very much. Rufus, what do you got for us?
It was the first preview when I thought I...
Well, he was so busy backstage loosening petticoat waistbands.
It could be from anything, you know.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah?
Your most embarrassing one, is that?
I think so.
You didn't throw up on stage or something?
No, but I... Well, there's two that... Well, that whole night was a mess for me. The one was a costume thing, but the other thing, if you were there, you would have seen... I'm on a piano stool. So we're in rehearsal for the piano stool, and they have to get me a new one because I fell off of the stool. And then, I can't say that on radio. And so then, during the show that night, they put handlebars on the piano so I could hold on as they move me around the stage while I sit on the stool.
Oh, okay.
So we're going. The first location we got there, fine. The second location, we're going. I am not falling on the floor. The stool went down, and I got up and just started running.
So, yeah, you're running along with handlebars on a piano.
Exactly.
Oh, that's hysterical.
That's
exactly.
Awesome.
And the piano stool was wherever it was. Yeah. I have no idea.
So obviously the piano stool on wheels
yes.
is supposed to go with you.
Yes.
And you just became Fred Flintstone in his car.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
Very funny stuff. What a nice... pleasant afternoon to spend with the two of you. Thank you so much for having us.
That just flew. I can't believe that it's 50
right?
minutes.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Just absolutely flew. Michael, do you have the information there? We'll give it out one more time before the end of the hour.
Of course. Ragtime, if you have this this weekend available, ladies and gentlemen, because it will be at the Fullerton Plummer Auditorium through the 26th. of October, and it closes with a 2 p.m. matinee, so that's pretty sweet. And then it reopens in Redondo Beach at the Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center, and that is a run through November 9th, November 1st through November 9th. So you have plenty of opportunities to get out there and see this magnificent piece of theater from 3D Theatricals and these wonderful guests who we have today, Rufus Bonds Jr., and also the lovely Christina Crowder.
Christina.
I said it okay?
You have to actually bring your shoulders up.
Yes,
when you
I
say
did.
It.
Christina. I felt like I should. And also, I must say, if you are in and around Hollywood and you would like to see the magnificent Pippin, you should do that because it's not going to be sitting at that theater for very long, and it certainly is worth it in every sort of way. Just go to HollywoodPantages.com for tickets.
And give to Partners of Doris, a nonprofit group hosting their annual Save the Music Fall fundraiser. And that is at podpartnersofdoris.org or via PayPal at tinyurl.com/podsavethemusic.
And Broadway's Greatest Hits, Valley Performing Arts Center, Sunday. Yes. There for one day. So lots of choices. You know, I get very upset when people say that the theater in Los Angeles is dead.
I know.
And they say it all the time.
No, I know. It's because they won't make the effort. That's it. They won't make the effort to go out because they got to get back in their car after a day of work.
Exactly.
That's their problem. So they just don't want to go to it. A pleasure having both of you here.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Well, as always, see you on the radio.
See you next week.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle right here on LA Talk Radio.